Good afternoon and welcome to this meeting of the Camden Local Planning Panel. I was just waiting for the clock to officially turn over to 2 o'clock and we're there now. My name is Stuart McDonald and I'm the chair of today's meeting. And the other panel members on my far left is Debbie Dewberry, who is a community representative. On my immediate left is Grant Christmas, who is an expert member, and on my right is Rachel Harrison, who is also an expert member. In opening, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land on which we meet and pay our respects to elders both past and present. I'll also inform the meeting that there will be audio recording of today's meeting. And other than that official audio recording, there is to be no other recording of today's meeting using phone, camera or anything else. And that's a reminder for us all, if you wouldn't mind just checking your phone as I just did to make sure it's off or on silent. Thank you. Are there any declarations of interest from any of the panel meetings for today's items?
No.
And I also have nothing to declare. Today's agenda includes two development applications. They are respectively for 160 and 168 Heath Road, Leppington. That's the first DA on today's agenda. And that is for the remediation of contaminated land, demolition of existing structures, stage subdivision creating 65 Torrens Title residential lots and one residue lot, tree removal and associated works. And the second DA is at number 20 Hill Street, Camden, and that is for the demolition of part of the Heritage Cottage, the carrying out of alterations and additions, and the use of those premises as a denture clinic. I'll just let the people in the gallery know that we have two registered speakers for today, and they are both registered to speak in relation to the Heath Road matter. In a moment, I'll just ask if there are any other speakers. The protocol for the Camden Local Planning Panel meeting is that each speaker has 4 minutes, and when it's your turn to speak, you'll be invited to come up to the table here and make your presentation. You may also receive questions from the panel, so just loiter there for a moment after you've finished addressing the panel in case we do have any questions. The panel has, in preparation for today's meeting, has attended both of the sites. We've been briefed by the council officers on the nature of the applications. We've been provided with a package including the council officers' assessment report and the information lodged with each of the application, including the architectural drawings and so on, as well as any submissions, written submissions that have been made in response to the public notification of the applications. So we come along here armed with quite a bit of information, but we're also interested in hearing from anyone who wishes to address the panel. The panel, after having heard from the presenters, may also have questions of council officers, and today on the table immediately in front of us, council officers Jamie Erkin and Jessica Masiti, hope I've pronounced that correctly, who may also assist the panel if we have any questions, or they may also respond to any issues that are raised during the submissions as well. Once all of that is wrapped up, the panel will then close the public meeting and we will adjourn to make our decision in relation to both of those matters. And we will not be returning, but our decision will be published on the council's website, within 48 hours of today's meeting. So they are the preliminaries. As I say, this public meeting is the opportunity for those people who wish to address the panel to do so. The two registered speakers that we have for today, Mr. Adam Crampton, you're here, and Mr. Michael Chan, here as well, thank you. Are you coming up individually or together? Or?
I'll speak
on behalf. Yes, okay. I'll get you up in just a moment. I'll just check, are there any other people here today who wish to address the panel at all and who haven't registered yet? No? Okay. All right. Then we just have the one speaker by the sounds of it. So, Mr. Crampton, if you could come forward, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Adam Crampton. I'm a town planner with ADW Johnson. We've been acting on behalf of Rawson Homes, the proponent for this application. The only request we have of the panel is in relation to draft condition number 23 from within the prior to issue of a construction certificate set of conditions.
What page is that on, Mr. Crampton?
That
business
is
paper?
On page 72.
Good, thank you. Thank you. Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. Now, condition 23 requires a separate remediation action plan to be prepared and a separate DA to be lodged for remediation of any contamination found beneath the buildings that are proposed to be demolished. Now, it's we have discussed this with council prior to this meeting, and we actually believe that that condition is not required because condition 19 in the during works set of conditions suitably addresses that requirement in that it allows for any sort of an unexpected fines protocol, which is referred to within the report that was prepared with the application. Now, in discussing this matter with staff, the reference was made to SREP 20 as being the reason for that condition being included within the consent. Now, we've had a look at this and we note that clause 11 bracket 4 of the SREP refers to remediation of land as being an action requiring consent. However, it's our understanding that the intent of that clause is to ensure that the rehabilitation of any contaminated sites is not carried out without consent. In this instance, the application specifically, as you would have noted earlier on, the application specifically includes remediation of contaminated land. We've got the contamination assessment, which was done in support of that, and the remediation action plan. That contamination report, I think, had something like 22 boreholes within the site. So we're of the opinion that upon demolition of any of the buildings on the site, if anything is found in the immediate footprint of those buildings, the unexpected fines protocol that we have in here is sufficient, and with our main aim being to avoid the need for a separate DA for something that's already covered within the subject application. And that's it, thank you.
All right, thank you. And that other condition that you're referring to, what page is that?
I don't have the business paper numbering with me, I'm sorry.
It's... Thank you.
Thank you, yes.
Sorry. Might just ask council officers, are you in a position to respond to... Thank you, Mr. Erkin.
Councillor's special environmental health officer was concerned about contamination under the base of the buildings, which had been demolished, hence the current remediation action plan, because is unaware of what contaminant may be under those buildings, specified that he would like some more contamination testing under those buildings once they've been demolished. And because of the SREP requirements, it's council's view that a DA must be submitted for the additional remediation works. So that's why the conditions there. There was a specific request about under the buildings. I suppose it's not an unexpected find because the area hasn't been tested, and there was concern there could be contamination under those buildings.
I see. All right.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, please. The concern from Rawson Homes isn't in regard to the requirement for further testing upon demolition. There's no objection to that. The primary objection is the request for a separate DA to be lodged if any contamination is found. So we believe with what we're stating, the intent of what council is after is being met, and the concern regarding the requirement within SREP 20 is also met because this application already is specifically for remediation of the land. Therefore, another application would be redundant in this case.
Mr. Christmas.
Yeah, sir. I must say I'm a bit perplexed by it because I would have thought the remediation action plan that you'd submitted would have dealt with the contingency that that deals with any possible contamination under the buildings, bearing in mind it relates to a site or an area. But anyway, I haven't seen it, so I suppose I make that comment.
I understand what you're saying. I'd also make the point that many of the boreholes that we've got within our report, and it's as an attachment, are within close proximity to the buildings. And during the assessment process, council also asked for further testing to be done regarding the base of the power poles within the site, and that was also done. So we believe that with the number of boreholes, the locations and the power poles, it's been quite an exhaustive process, and as I said, we've got no objection to the further testing immediately under the building. It's really just the requirement for DA. Thank you.
Pardon my ignorance, but what is the likely contamination that needs to be remediated or needs to be got rid of, if I can put it in those colloquial terms?
I'm not certain.
Stewie.
Can I ask a question? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? So do we demolish the buildings, then remediate, or are we remediating, then demolishing the buildings, hence council's concerns that there could be something under the buildings?
Well, my understanding is that the demolition occurs first, then the remediation. And possibly going back to Mr. Christmas' earlier question, I don't know, we're speculating here, but it may be potentially the council are concerned that upon demolition there may be some asbestos that may be under the site or something like that. But again, we have no objection to that contention. It's really just the requirement for a separate DA. The remediation, we believe, of anything that may be found is covered within what's already been submitted to council.
I would imagine that putting a second DA in is council's ability legally to be able to go back to the site to double check and triple check that the remediation has been done fully. And historically, I can't imagine that council of the day, way back, would have checked anything. Like we're so conscious of it now, but going back when those buildings were put in, there's probably no guarantee one way or the other whether anything is underneath those buildings, and we won't know until they're removed.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with that. And again, I keep coming back to the point that there's no objection to that testing underneath the demolished buildings at that time. So. And that's a condition of consent that's already within the draft conditions. So council hasn't lost any ability to be satisfied that appropriate testing has been done, and then that has been validated as being an appropriately remediated site upon the works being done. So we understand council's need for certainty in these regards, and we fully support that. What we're saying is that is already enshrined within there without the need to go back and lodge a separate DA for that work, when we believe that the consent is for remediation, the studies have been done to support that, and appropriate conditions are already in place within the draft set.
Can I ask council officers then, is it necessary for you to double check and triple check if that's what necessary for the remediation or to be completely satisfied that the remediation has been done fully. Does that require a DA? Why are we asking for a DA to be put in? And what sort of inspections does council do to make sure the remediation is done properly?
The existing remediation action plan doesn't deal with the potential contaminants under the building. And so the council requires a DA to be lodged for all remediation because it requires consent of council and council has the ability to approve the remediation action plan. So it's simply that the current remediation action plan doesn't deal with the areas under the existing buildings because they haven't been tested and we don't know what contaminants are under there, hence the need for the condition.
In that case, why wasn't that picked up when this DA was lodged in the first place? Like, we're talking about this as a whole thing. If the remediation report's been put in, why didn't council pick up that it wasn't covering, excuse the pun, covering what was underneath the buildings and we're going back to square one, which possibly could delay this development moving forward?
I guess it's simply the fact the building was in the way of doing the testing and that's why the condition's there to allow it to happen. The demolition of the building requires consent. Once the building's been demolished, the testing can occur and if it requires remediation, that's when the remediation plan for that section of the site comes to council for approval.
But back to my original question, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? What I'm getting at is if you're removing the buildings, then the remediation goes ahead, is that not covering under the buildings anyway because the buildings won't be there for the remediation to go
ahead? I might just intervene there, if you don't mind, Ms. Jury. I think the situation is that testing couldn't occur because there's an existing building. Testing can only occur following demolition, and there's probably a couple of ways that this matter could be handled. The council officers who specialise in this area have recommended this condition that testing occur post-demolition. There may be an alternative approach whereby I agree the testing should occur, but maybe an alternative approach could be that based on the findings of that investigation, that the remediation action plan is updated appropriately and referred back to council for as required without the need for a DA. So you'd go through the same process. Council would still have oversight and comfort that contamination and remediation is being appropriately investigated and managed, but without the need for a DA. But that's something we perhaps can discuss as a... I don't think it's unreasonable that the council to nominate that without demolition, nobody knows what's there. That's not anybody's fault. That's just a fact. It's how it's handled going forward. That's the issue. Was there any other questions of Mr. Crampton or council officers? Yes, Mr. Christmas.
I just wanted to raise with Mr. Crampton, we've had some discussion about some of the conditions of consent, and the panel, I suppose, bearing in mind that one of probably the sole reason that the application is coming to us is because it involves a removal of heritage listed trees. We were just concerned, can I take you to condition 11 on page 66? I think it's condition 1.0. Sub condition 11. I take it you would have no difficulty if we were just to expand that condition to specifically refer to the protection of the trees that are proposed to be retained, and you know that appropriate measures be worked into that condition to ensure that there was indeed retention during demolition, etc.
Just one moment, please.
Sure.
No, there'd be no objection to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just ask, in we're creating this residue with the heritage house on it. This application doesn't include any use of that, whether we understand it's offices, whether that's going to be converted back to a dwelling, another DA. How will this site be secured, say, once stage one? Is there decorative fencing? Is what is proposed, I guess, around the boundary of this site? It's all road frontage and to preserve that heritage aspect rather than are we just going to be seeing fencing or security fencing?
The lots that adjoin what we're referring to as the heritage residue lot will all have boundary fencing on there. Along the Heath Road frontage, at this point, we weren't proposing any additional fencing beyond what's already there. And the plan is to prepare a separate application for the development of that site, retaining that heritage building. And at that point, an appropriate use for that building would be included. So, originally, the application did seek to include the entire property, but for a number of reasons during the process, the decision was made to have that part retained as a residue lot for further consideration as a separate application.
Yeah, my concern is just around what I think is called Road 1 and Road 3, which doesn't have, which look as though it appears as though the direct street frontage is from that residue with the heritage house on it. My concern would be, how is it going to be secured until such time, if that doesn't occur?
Well, in terms of...
We're not going to stick 1.8 palisade fence or anything like that.
No, along roads 1 and 3, those roads will also have curb and gutter constructed, and that will be prohibitive for any vehicles entering that portion of the site. But at this point, there hasn't been any further thought given to fencing around those portions of the site.
Just further to that, just wondering whether, if it's not explicit in the consent, that it might be appropriate to explicitly state that there is to be a separate application for the use or any development and use on residue lot 66, including landscaping and fencing around its perimeter, subject to a future application?
Except for any lots that are in the vicinity. Oh, no, actually, no, there's no objection to that. Thank you, yes.
So that would give...
Certainly, yeah.
..give some level of comfort and certainty about, well, in the future, some certainty about the outcomes on that site, including perimeter fencing.
Yeah, we understand the need for certainty, so there's no objection to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Juber, you had another question?
I did. It's a pretty simple one. Is when you're selling these lots, and I deal with this on a weekly basis, when you're selling these lots, will you be upfront with the people buying the lots and telling them that they are going to be this far away from an international airport? I get complaints weekly from people, city slickers that move into this area and are not familiar with the area. They'll complain they've got a main road, they've got a train, they didn't want the buses, the tips there, we didn't know about the airport. It goes on their 149 certificate when they're building their homes, but when they're building their homes and they move in, that's when they come and complain that they didn't know that was happening. So when your sales staff are selling the blocks, I know this is out of the realms of what we're dealing with, but they come back to me and complain, will you be upfront with people and say, you are 2 kilometres from well, now it's called the Nancy Bird Wharton Airport, Badgerys Creek Airport, because nine times out of 10, the people buying these blocks are from the city and they are not familiar with the area. And given that the airport is still under construction until 2026, they probably will never be aware until the plane takes off and flies over their houses that they're this far away from an airport, so as the crow flies or as the plane flies. So I just want to make sure that people buying the blocks of land are doing their homework, but also the sales staff being up front with those people and saying, you do understand that there is an international airport being built and planes will be taking off in 2026, so that they are well informed when they're buying their block of land, not when it's on their 149 certificate and it's brought to their attention by their solicitor. That's all I'm asking.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Look, I can't speak for Rawson Homes. I might ask Michael to see if he could respond to that.
There's always a question out of left field.
That's that one.
Good afternoon, panel. My name is Michael Chan. I'm the development manager who looks after this site on behalf of Rawson Communities. Thank you.
Debbie?
Okay. We... ironically, one of our marketing strategies is actually the convenience to the airport. I think a lot of the people who move the area appreciate that the fact that it is close to transport and having, you know, infrastructure like leaping the train station is one of the things that why people are attracted to the area. But all of our sales consultants, we're bound by consumer law and we can't obviously be deceptive and misleading in terms of our requirements in terms of marketing and sales. So all of our point of sale material will have all the materials that allow people to make the judgment, recognising that they also need to make their own inquiries. So the airport is one of the biggest things that's happening in Sydney, and I'll be very surprised if nobody's aware of it, but our sales consultants are well briefed and they will recognise and tell people of the convenience of living where they are.
Good, thank you very much. Thanks. Any more questions for Mr. Crampton or Mr. Chan? Thank you. You've both off the hook. Thank you very
much
for your assistance.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you for
the opportunity. Any more questions for council officers from the panel? That being the case, then we'll finish on that matter and we'll move to item number two, which is 20 Hill Street in Camden, which is the Heritage Cottage, the minor extension to the rear of that. Just confirming that there's no one wishing to address the panel on this matter. That being the case, then we will consider this item when we retire, and that decision in relation to this matter and the previous matter will be published on the council's website. So I'll draw the meeting to a close. Thank you for your attendance and interest, including council officers for their assistance to date. We'll close the meeting and we will retire to consider those two matters. Thank you.